Hi, this is Willie Nelson from Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. More than 500,000 Americans are arrested each year for smoking pot. These are ordinary citizens like you and me whose lives and careers are being needlessly destroyed. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORML.
And distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back here to the Audio Stash. Today, it is Wednesday, November 28th. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal right now. Help us end marijuana prohibition in America. You can make a big difference by making your donation or joining Normal today at norml.org. And continuing on through another great week of Audio Stash programming here today, we'll have our cannabis science segment with Dr. Mitch Earlywine today. We'll talk about cannabis tinctures and a couple of other subjects in cannabis science today. Also in the program today, we'll speak with the associate publisher at High Times Magazine, Rick Cusick, about the Cannabis Cup, which completed up last week. It was the 20th annual Cannabis Cup. A big showing of support there, probably the biggest ever as far as vendors, participating coffee shops, and attendees this year at the Cannabis Cup. So we'll talk to Rick Cusick about that today. We'll also check in with Danny Danko about the winners at the Cannabis Cup in tomorrow's Audio Stash. Tomorrow and Friday, we'll speak with Danielle and Richard Lee out at Oaksterdam University. They've got a new set of classes training people to be involved in California's cannabis industry. So that'll be tomorrow and Friday. And also in Friday's show, we'll speak with Richard Cowan, former director at Normal, and Michael and Jason at Coffee Shop Travel. Richard is leading the Sensible Amsterdam tour. I know you've heard the ads for that here in the Audio Stash, and we have links to join on to that tour right up on our website at normalaudiostash.com. We'll speak with Mr. Cowan, Michael, and Jason about Amsterdam, about the tour itself, and what people can expect on the Sensible Amsterdam tour. Very reasonably priced tour to Amsterdam. You got a couple of exclusive meetings, such as sit-downs at the Cannabis Cup winner this year, Barney's Breakfast Bar, and also with the Cannabis Retailers Association in Amsterdam. Again, this is the Sensible Amsterdam tour with Coffee Shop Travel and Normal. Links to it at normalaudiostash.com. More about all of that on Friday's Audio Stash. And next week is the Drug Policy Alliance and Students for Sensible Drug Policy Conference in the Big Easy in New Orleans. Normal is seeking a volunteer right now to help us out with the National Normal Table at the Drug Policy Alliance Conference. If you happen to be in the New Orleans area or are willing to travel and volunteer to help National Normal set up and man the table there at the Drug Policy Alliance Conference, we'll give you a free registration to the DPA conference next week. All you have to do is call up area code 202-483-5500. Again, that's 202-483-5500. Talk to Ron Fisher, National Normal's Outreach Coordinator, and tell Ron you'd like to man the table at the Drug Policy Alliance conference next week. We're going to start off our Audio Stash today with some very interesting news from Wisconsin in our daily news today. Let's get to that now. Our news today from Waukesha, Wisconsin. Wisconsin County decriminalizes first-time marijuana possession. The Waukesha County Board of Supervisors voted 27-4 yesterday in favor of a measure to make the maximum penalty for a first-time pot possession violation a fine-only offense. Previously, such offenses were treated as misdemeanor violations, punishable by up to 6 months in jail. In a policy shift that mirrors recently enacted changes in Seattle, Ann Arbor, Michigan, and even London, England, Waukesha Sheriff's deputies will now have the option of writing first-time offenders a citation rather than arresting them and seeking criminal charges from the district attorney's office. Individuals found with a large quantity of marijuana or those believed to be drug dealers can still be heavily prosecuted. The county supervisors told the Associated Press that the change would ease the caseload and other administrative overhead for those in the local criminal justice system. Wisconsin is home to a number of marijuana liberalization laws. The city of Madison decriminalized minor marijuana possession offenses. Milwaukee County and other local municipalities have also decriminalized first-time marijuana possession. More information about this story is available on our website at normalaudiostash.com. Joining us today to discuss this vote in Waukesha County, Wisconsin, is Gary Stork, the director of Madison, Wisconsin Normal. Gary, welcome back here to the program today.
Thanks for having me back on, Chris.
Great to speak with you again, Gary. Waukesha is your home county, Gary. Tell us a little bit about the area.
I was born there in 1955, and back then it was quite rural, lots of farms. I think it was known as Dairy County USA back then. There were so many cows, you know, and Milwaukee was a big city pretty far off. And now, these days, it's gone up to the third largest county in the state, or the second largest county in the state, and the third, actually. The third largest county in the state, and there's Milwaukee and Waukesha practically become contiguous as far as urban sprawl. And Waukesha has become quite developed all the way, you know, all throughout the county. So it's really changed. It's gone from a sleepy dairy farming county to a quite urban place these days.
And, Gary, are you surprised that the county supervisors passed this new policy yesterday?
No, I'm not. I think they're just reflecting a quiet trend that's been taking place over Wisconsin for quite a while. And I think the situation in Waukesha County was that the former DA there, Paul Bucher, was he'd had like an 18-year reign there. So he was involved in DARE and opposed decriminalization. So even though the sheriff had been advocating for it for a number of years, it wasn't until Bucher resigned to run for higher office that they were able to get in another district attorney who was open to it.
Now, the vote on this was very strong, Gary. It wasn't an even split, but 27-4 in favor of the change. That is a pretty strong statement on their part.
Yeah, I think they saw it not only as prudent policy in that, you know, not tarring small-time offenders. You know, a lot of times people's children with criminal offenses for having a little bit of cannabis, but also to reflect the fact, as the Milwaukee Journal article noted, that under this plan, they get to keep the fines rather than sending the money to the state as they would if the DA prosecuted it as a misdemeanor or felony under state law. So it's kind of a win-win for them in that regard.
And could this policy change make a difference right away there in Waukesha County?
Yeah, I think it will. I know that some municipalities in Waukesha County have had ordinances on the books for a while. So I think, you know, it'll start being utilized pretty more regularly at the county level. I've heard some really sad stories of police overreacting for small quantities of cannabis there, and I hope that that this will be something that takes them away from that and just, you know, if they're going to come upon somebody with cannabis, you know, just ticket them and move on instead of being so punitive. I might add now that Waukesha County, the third largest county in the state, this action means that now the top 16 most populous counties in the state all have some kind of county ordinance that reduces, that gives a ticket for cannabis possession. So when I was originally contacted about this, when Waukesha County was first looking into this a few weeks ago, I decided to take a deeper look into how prevalent this was in Wisconsin, and I was surprised to find that not only did most major cities have a city ordinance, but that most of the counties had adopted them. And up until, I think, 1995, you could only Milwaukee County was allowed to decriminalize cannabis, but since then, every county has had that option, and it's good to see that they've taken advantage of it, and it's good to see Waukesha County belatedly joining the rest of the state. They have close to 400,000 people there, so it's a big change there, I think.
It's very interesting. You know, we hear a lot about decriminalization efforts in other places, like California makes national news. But again, looking around Wisconsin, the state has quietly decriminalized almost everywhere.
Yeah, I don't think there's many places you're going to go where you're not going to find it. And I think, you know, they've just accepted reality. And, well, it still may be politically unpopular to decriminalize, to talk about it, and that's perhaps what's kept the state legislature from doing it. At least you can see on a local and county level that they've recognized the reality that, you know, that their fellow citizens aren't harming anybody by possessing small quantities of cannabis, and that really they've got a lot better things to do with their law enforcement and criminal justice apparatus than targeting people for little amounts of cannabis.
Righto. Well, Gary, this has been a great conversation here today. I really appreciate you taking time to join us to weigh in on this news item today, and I look forward to speaking with you again about all those reform efforts in Wisconsin very soon.
Yeah, thank you, Chris.
Thank you again. Gary Stork is the director of Madison, Wisconsin Normal. We have links to their website right up at normalaudiostash.com. Have you ever wondered what Amsterdam is all about? Don't just read about the culture that has accepted cannabis. Experience it firsthand with CS Travel's Sensible Amsterdam Tour with Normal. Travel to one of Europe's most beautiful cities this January for an educational and recreational visit to a city that regulates cannabis like alcohol. CS Travel has arranged an exclusive visit for reform-minded Americans that includes a private tour of some of Amsterdam's most renowned coffee shops, educational seminars with coffee shop proprietors, local law enforcement, members of the Cannabis Retailers Association, and Normal staff. Entertainment includes a special evening at the Boom Chicago Comedy Club, canal tours, visits to the city's many museums, including the world-famous Van Gogh Museum. Don't just wonder about Amsterdam, experience the beauty and freedom of this unique city firsthand with CS Travel and Normal Sensible Amsterdam Tour. Pricing information is available online at coffeeshoptravel.com. That's coffeeshoptravel.com. Or call toll-free at 800-816-1846. That's 800-816-1846. Be a sensible American. Visit Amsterdam with CS Travel and Normal this January. Call 1-800-816-1846 right now to book your trip. More information is available at normal.org.
You're listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
Next up today, it's time to check in with Dr. Mitch Earlywine for our weekly Cannabis Science segment. Each Wednesday here on the Audio Stash is Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Mitch is professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany. He's author of Understanding Marijuana, A New Look at the Scientific Evidence, editor of the book Pot Politics, and he's got a new book coming out this spring called A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. You can also catch a monthly column from Dr. Mitch in High Times magazine. Mitch, welcome back here to the program today.
Great to be on the show, Chris.
Thanks again for joining us this week, Mitch. Always great to have you here on the program. Today we're going to cover three different topics, and we're going to begin today with cannabis tinctures. This is an increasingly common delivery method for medical cannabis patients. So first, what is a tincture?
It's interesting because this goes back to some of cannabis's uses that were very popular in the 1700s and 1800s. Although the medical literature has very little published on it, and essentially the best tinctures are really just ethanol extracts. It's any kind of herb soaked in alcohol for a while, and then the alcohol can extract a lot of the essential chemicals. In the case of marijuana, it's usually THC, but some of the other cannabinoids are alcohol soluble as well. Usually it takes something as simple as, you know, taking a small amount, a few buds, or as much as you'd like, and covering it in alcohol, ideally a strong alcoholic beverage, an Everclear type thing that is predominantly alcohol, you know, over 150 proof, and then letting that soak. A lot of folks recommend at least 2 weeks, and then finally using that tincture, then you can administer really just a dropper full or even a few drops. And although, like other oral-administered drugs, it does take a little while to absorb, because it's absorbed through the mucous membranes of the mouth, it's often quicker than, you know, the standard edibles, and can get a whole lot of relief for pain, nausea, vomiting, those kinds of problems, as well as a lot of folks do report at higher doses a psychoactive effect.
So it does have the psychoactive effects as well. So in high enough doses, there will be a similar high to inhaled cannabis, is that right?
It is dose dependent, though, in a much more gradual onset. So your body essentially adapts to it as it gets absorbed, relatively slowly compared to inhaled vapor or something like that. And you know, it's really not a toy. It's something that you have to experiment with dosage, because we don't have a ton of data or a standardized set of tinctures. But when you look back at, you know, the medical pharmacopoeia before, say, the 1930s, you see this was actually a relatively popular medication for things like menstrual cramps and nausea and stuff like that. And some of the substances back then had some pretty novel names, Dr. Poppy's cannabis extract and things like that. And it's essentially a great way of using this without having to inhale any smoke or vapor. And it's something that people can, you know, use relatively quickly. It's something you can carry around with you. It's not something that often attracts law enforcement attention. And, a lot of folks who use it regularly really swear by it and find it's a great way for them to administer medical cannabis without having to worry about some of the concerns associated with vapor or smoke.
And the idea of having a medication suspended, mixed, or infused in alcohol, this is certainly common. Anyone who takes a liquid cold or cough medication that we can all buy over the counter will encounter alcohol. I'm always surprised how strong the alcohol is in those over the counter drugs, Mitch.
Well, in fact, you know, a lot of the cold medications are, you know, 28 to 50 proof, so basically they're about as strong as a lot of the schnapps that's on the market. So, in fact, although this has, you know, a lot of alcohol in it, you don't need a very large dose. So people who are concerned about alcohol consumption or alcohol-related intoxication usually don't have to have a half an ounce. So it's not as if that's going to be the source of any odd psychoactive effects or in a combination with the cannabis. So I don't think of it as an alcoholic beverage so much as just a way to extract the psychoactive and other active components of the marijuana.
And is tincture delivery more effective for some medical conditions compared to inhalation or even edibles?
All the work is anecdotal, of course, but I get some real avid fans of it for insomnia, which would suggest that maybe cannabidiol as well as THC is involved. And a number of folks use it as an anxiolytic, and though, you know, I'm always harping on how cognitive behavioral therapies for anxiety are more effective in the long run. It certainly does seem to decrease anxiety in the short run, and it's a relatively small dose. markedly less, you know, addictive potential than some of the anxiolytic drugs that are popular right now. And, you know, again, a relatively easy access and something that you don't feel like you have to rely on every day, but can just sort of have handy if you're concerned about panic or an anxious reaction to some other situation.
You mentioned experimenting with doses for the tinctures. Are some of the medical marijuana clinics and providers in California coming up with a more consistent dosing scheme for tinctures now?
Yeah, I've been really impressed with the strong empirical work these folks are doing, and I wish there were better outlets for publishing some of it. But they, you know, work with the strains that are comparable across seasons and try to use the same amount and the same amount of alcohol and then soaking it for the same amount of time. And in fact, they are coming up with some relatively ideal periods for the soaking, then straining out the plant matter so that it's a consistent kind of dosage. Obviously, it's too expensive to get, you know, the amount of cannabinoid analyzed by some kind of drug analysis company, but people do seem to be able to produce, you know, within one batch, very consistent, and even across batches, relatively consistent responses. People don't seem to develop tolerance particularly rapidly, in part because a lot of folks who use tinctures don't use every day, and so it seems to be something they can really rely on. They know, you know, six drops is their thing, and then that really does the trick and keeps the pain down or, you know, keeps the other symptoms away. And I'm pleased to say that we've made a lot of progress, but of course there could be tremendous progress with something like this, you know, without having to rely on an underground or quasi-underground market, and then we could really, really improve this a lot.
Well, Mitch, this has been great. I'm glad we discussed this today. We'll have to explore tinctures more in the future. Now, tinctures are sprayed into the mouth, and that is the delivery method for our next topic today, but we're going to discuss a much different product. It's called Sativex. Mitch, we've discussed this drug before here in this segment and with Paul Armentano just last week, but I wanted to get your take on a recent study published in the journal Clinical Therapeutics. This study looked at patients who've been prescribed Sativex for 2 years, specifically to treat MS. Now, these patients, after 2 years, were both taking less Sativex now, and they had lessened their doses of toxic pain medications. In some cases, stopped those analgesics altogether. So why is this study so important?
I should caution everyone that I do own stock in the Sativex company, so, you know, they should take my comments with that in mind. But I am stunned, really blown away with the beauty of this research. First of all, to have that two-year follow-up is relatively rare for a whole lot of medications, particularly anything that's focused on pain. What I really take a lot of delight in with this finding is it's a relatively large sample, so they had 28 patients, and these folks didn't lean heavily on their opiate meds, so you know, neuropathic pain is a real drag. It's hard to treat. It doesn't really respond well to Vicodin and some of the other opiates. These folks had the opportunity to use Sativex, and it was, you know, in a setting where they were using it as an analgesic. You spray it in your mouth. It does take about 30 to 40 minutes to absorb fully. As we've seen in other data, this is a kind of an inverted U, if you will. There's an optimal level of cannabinoids for pain relief, and if you go too far, in fact, the pain relief is less effective. You don't have the analgesic effect at high doses that you have at moderate doses. And so these people were really able to titrate their own dose personally. They could, you know, put a spray in their mouth according to their own needs, and this, I think, is a nice mechanism for decreasing the opportunity for tolerance and dependence, letting them really be able to wean themselves off these analgesics. And as you saw at the two-year follow-up, a lot of folks really weren't using it or were using it relatively infrequently by that time and had also not increased or in some cases meaningfully decreased their use of other pain meds. Even, you know, over-the-counter analgesics like aspirin and ibuprofen and stuff like that can be really hard on your liver or just take its toll long-term, and we don't have data suggesting that cannabis-related medicines do that kind of thing. So I feel like this is a big win for everybody. I'd sure like to see Sativex become more available in every country.
Now, Sativex is a natural cannabis spray. Mitch, how is it made? How do they get that spray with just THC and cannabidiol CBD in it?
This is a brilliant series of pharmacological and basically hortological research. The horticulturists behind this have been great. They've been breeding strains that are primarily high in THC, but they're finding also that, you know, cannabidiol has a whole lot of wonderful effects, so they've got strains that are really high in that. At least in some of the studies, it's actually the mix, the presence of both of these in the spray, that seems to do particularly well for folks with certain symptoms. A lot of data suggests that cannabidiol kind of takes the nuttiness of THC off, if you will. Some of the more intoxicating or thought interfering effects of THC are moderated if cannabidiol is in there as well. At least one study suggests that cannabidiol may make THC metabolism slow down a little bit, so you actually end up having to use less because it stays in your system a little longer. It seems like the plant itself, at least in the way it may grow in nature, may be particularly ideal for this, so that both these substances are present, and perhaps by divine design, so that people can use this in a way that they can get the maximum benefit.
Righto. Well, we're going to continue to cover Sativex as they're seeking market approval here in the United States. Also, Mitch, our final topic today is a very interesting story that came out 2 weeks ago. Mitch, often in our segments on Wednesdays, we're discussing the risks and dangers of smoking cannabis for the very small portion of the population that may be living with schizophrenia. But this study out just a couple of weeks ago again is much different. In fact, the story says that marijuana use was associated with enhanced cognitive performance later in life with schizophrenics. So tell us what you think of this study.
It's an intriguing study and obviously one that needs replication. And anytime I see any impact of cannabis in folks who aren't randomly assigned to use it, we have to wonder, well, maybe these people were just better off in the first place. So we don't have, you know, longitudinal data suggesting that the cannabis actually enhanced their cognitive performance so much as the folks who used it, particularly before they had their first psychotic break, seem to be the ones who are either holding on to cognitive abilities or at least performing better on a subset of tests than folks who never used cannabis, particularly prior to their psychotic break. I want to emphasize that they aren't randomly assigned. Maybe these folks were just better off in the first place, and that might be why they were more willing to try cannabis or something along those lines. Nevertheless, we do have some animal literature and some interesting, even some human data suggesting that there are some neurological enhancing or at least preserving effects of THC. We know the cannabinoids can be antioxidants and can preserve nerve function in a certain subset of situations. Perhaps that's what's going on here. Schizophrenia is definitely associated with some cognitive dysfunctions, and some of the tests that these investigators use, these scores are, you know, well below the norms for your average college sophomore or something along those lines. Nevertheless, they did a great job with, you know, controlling for just finding effects by chance. I thought that they were extremely on top of the idea that they, you know, didn't want to just administer a bunch of tests and then have a few turn out significantly different just because they had given them so many. So I really do trust these results. I feel like there may be some neuroprotective factors of the cannabinoids that are showing up in this literature, but because folks weren't randomly assigned, I don't want to make too big a deal out of it. I do want to mention again the Thornycraft data showing that people who've already had a psychotic break, schizophrenics in particular, if they use cannabis heavily and recreationally, they're more likely to have a subsequent psychotic break. So obviously this is not, you know, a way to treat or preserve any kind of aspects of cognitive functioning in schizophrenics. What it does say is, hey, the cannabinoids really have a neat antioxidant neuroprotective thing going on here, and we need more research along these lines that perhaps there is a cannabis-related medicine that could help with neuroprotection in a number of degenerative diseases of the brain, schizophrenia being just one of them.
Righto. Well, Mitch, this has been another great conversation here today, really covering a lot of ground. I really appreciate you joining us each Wednesday here on the Audio Stash. Thank you again.
Oh, it's great being on the show. Thanks for having me.
Thank you again, Mitch. Dr. Mitch Earlywine is professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany. He's author of Understanding Marijuana, A New Look at the Scientific Evidence, and editor of the book Pot Politics. We have links to the books at normalaudiostash.com. Mitch has a new book coming out this spring called A Parent's Guide to Marijuana, and you can catch a monthly column from him in High Times magazine. Stay tuned. Speaking of High Times, we're going to speak with Rick Cusick, the associate publisher at High Times, about the Cannabis Cup. That's coming up next. up today, we're going to start to check in on the Cannabis Cup, the 20th annual Cannabis Cup, which took place last week. More information about the winners and all the happenings there are available at High Times website. That's hightimes.com. We have links to it at normalaudio-.com. Make sure to check out the High Times MySpace blog. They post a lot of current information, including the Cannabis Cup winners up there. Joining us today is Rick Cusick. He's the associate publisher at High Times magazine, and he just returned from Amsterdam in the 20th annual Cannabis Cup last week. We're going to hear about the happenings at this year's big event from Rick today, and tomorrow we'll talk with cultivation editor at High Times, Danny Danko. The Cannabis Cup has become an extremely important event for the cannabis industry in Amsterdam. Winning the cup can be a big boost to the sales of a coffee shop, seed bank, or cultivator. It's kind of like winning an award in the advertising industry or a Webby Award for online media. So while it's a lot of fun for the attendees, for the High Times staff and the judges there, it's a very serious event. Rick, great to have you back here on the Audio Stash today. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much. I am happy to be home, I must say.
Righto. So how was your trip there last week to Amsterdam, Rick?
Well, it was great. I mean, you know, first of all, you can't beat Amsterdam, and secondly, you can't beat the Cup. Going to the Amsterdam when the Cup is in town is like going to what used to be New Orleans during Mardi Gras. You really don't see New Orleans, you see the Mardi Gras, and the same thing is true. You really don't see Amsterdam as much as you see the Cup. We had several dozen coffee shops that participated with us. We had a record number of people. I'm not sure what it was, but I think it was well over 3,000. And it was just a great cup all around. It was our 20th anniversary. And what was also unusual about this, because it was the 20th anniversary, the entire staff of High Times magazine was there.
That must have been a cool experience. I know you guys are a pretty close-knit group.
Well, yeah, we're pretty tight-knit group, a very tight-knit group, more than I've ever been in any other job in my life. But basically, we went over there and worked the cup. I mean, doing all the registration and, you know, helping people out and getting acclimated. It's the cup takes place over Amsterdam as a whole. There's 23, 24 participating coffee shops, and plus we have an expo that goes on towards the outskirts of town, and at night there's always some kind of big musical act. We had Mo this year, and so the High Times staff is in the you know, pit of the fire there. I mean, you know, we actually are running the cup and doing it. Although this year I had a very unique job. Normally I'd be running around with them, but this year I was a celebrity judge, and I was sequestered in a room in the top of a house in Amsterdam with about 8 other people. And we're celebrity judges for both the coffee shop weeds and then finally for the sativas before I went home. And the indigas were still to go when I went back. So literally, I mean, I went to Amsterdam and smoked 36 varieties of pot in 4 days.
Wow.
I had to judge them. I mean, we kept copious notes. And it was really interesting. I was sitting in the room with people who really knew their stuff. I certainly wasn't one of them. But I was happy to, you know, watch these guys do their thing.
And Rick, what's it like being a celebrity judge there? How do you choose?
Again, you know, I hang out around a lot of cannabis cognoscente, but I personally don't grow, and I don't know that sort of thing, but I have a lot of close friends who do, and some of them were other members of the High Times staff were in that room with me. They know their stuff. They're looking for smell, and they're looking for cultivators' concerns, you know, like how it was trimmed. They're looking for its pedigree and how it smokes and how it vaporizes. And I went through all of this with them and got an education. I've kind of like sat at their feet. And it was very, very interesting. And plus we had a couple of other celebrity people with us. Redman was in that room. The Gaskins, Stephen Gaskin and Ina Mae Gaskin, who are members of the Counterculture Hall of Fame and a great, great couple. They were in the room with us. And so we systematically went through dozens of weed. The sativas were all very fun and heady and light and laughing. And the coffee shop weeds were really fine commercial weeds, not a bad one in the bunch. And like I said, I left town just as they were breaking out the indicas.
Well, the All Sativa Cup for you this year, Rick, then. You mentioned there were a lot of attendees this year, but it also looked like a lot more coffee shops were involved with the Cup this year as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Coffee shops, cultivated, we had more coffee shops, I believe. We certainly had more people at the expo. Twice as many companies were represented at our daytime expo than ever before. And, you know, it was the 20th anniversary. The Cup's been going on for quite a long time, and it's been very successful, gotten more successful each year. It's high stakes. The people who win the Cup get a great deal more business thrown their way over the course of the year because it's the winners are publicized not only in High Times but get picked up in other media. So, you know, it's taken very seriously. I had to go up into that room. We actually called the room at the top of that beautiful home in Amsterdam where we went was called the Temple. And all of the weeds we smoked were written in codes. We had no idea what they were. And nobody that did know what they were allowed in the Temple. And we stayed sequestered in that room for days. It was a surreal experience, it really was. And I enjoyed it a great deal.
And let me ask, Rick, is it tough to be a judge?
Everybody asks, how do you do it? I mean, and you know, how do you know when you're on number 18, you know, that this is the one, you know? And the answer is that, you know, everybody has their own way of doing it, naturally. It's a very democratic process, and everybody in that room has their own say. But what it came down to is you go round robin, around and around, using the same ones over and over again until something jumps out and says, takes your notice. And then you put that one on the side, then you keep doing it again until something jumps out. And you discuss as you're doing it round robin, you're smoking and you're talking and you're paying very close attention to what it tastes like and what it looks like. And we had a microscope.
Wow.
We could look at it under a microscope. We had a microscope that was hooked up to a television set so we could look at it communally. We had a person who was an extraordinary medical grower in California who was basically took care of our every whim, you know, brought us food and soda and anything we needed, coffee, you know, just so we could keep going. Because it is rough, you know, when you get to number 24. You know, I, of course, it takes place over several days. I was there for 3 or 4 days in that room. And I have a great notebook, which I'll probably bequeath to my family somewhere along the way.
It's going to show up one day as an auction item on the Antiques Roadshow, you know?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Yeah, so I used to make sure that, you know, I took copious notes. And like I said, people in that room knew much more than I. And I sat there at some points and just didn't say a word, but as people were talking, I just wrote down what everybody was saying and got an education in the process.
Also, Rick, the Cannabis Cup has been going on 20 years now. It's moving into its second generation. Do you think there might be some offshoot events here in the United States in the future? I know there are a few out there already.
Well, there's only one Cannabis Cup, and that's the one that, you know, we have that we put on for 20 years in Amsterdam. This year was the biggest one by far, in every possible sense of the word, attendees and vendors and such. It's going to continue to grow. The question is you know, what's the future of the Cannabis Cup? Well, we're going to try and make it into even more of a world-class event than it already is. Now, that being said, there's also a number of smaller events, cups and such, that people put on all over, and that's healthy too. You know, it's basically an imitation, and which is, of course, the most sincerest form of flatter. But in this case, you know, it's problematic to put on a cup in the United States. It's problematic to put on a cup even in Vancouver, because you know, you wind up going against afoul of the law as soon as you do. Amsterdam is very friendly towards this; they're very happy. We were leaving. This didn't happen to me, but it happened to one of our staff. We were leaving Amsterdam after the Cup, and they were bringing back all the equipment. And naturally, they're going through, what was your purpose here? It was for business. And so they asked a number of questions and found out they were working at the Cannabis Cup, and they were working for High Times magazine. And they pulled him aside and, you know, said, "Now listen, you know, we're very happy to have you here. And, you know, we, there's a lot of laws here in Amsterdam that are, we're very liberal towards this, your culture. But it's not true when you go back to the United States. So make sure you look through all of your clothes. I wouldn't want anything bad happen to you." And that was our interaction, our last interaction as we left the Netherlands. So, you know, once you leave the Netherlands, it's not friendly like that anymore. And that's the magic of the Cannabis Cup. So, yeah, there are cups, and they play out in a variety of ways. They had a one up in Vancouver for a while, and they've had smaller ones throughout the United States. There's medical cups in California, and there's impromptu cups every day in every dormitory throughout the United States.
And Rick, Tommy Chong was there at the cup. He and Cheech were inducted into the Counterculture Hall of Fame. How did that go?
Tommy came up and thanked very much and came all the way to Amsterdam to take his award, and did. The Red Man performed. It was a phenomenal, phenomenal performance. Tommy and has been doing things with us now in the past couple of years since his bust. You know, as Normal knows, he's been much more involved in the political aspect of this question. And he was recently emceed at the Stony Awards in Los Angeles, which is a benefit for Normal. And he further took it to Amsterdam to get his award. Redman entertained one of the nights, and was one of the best shows I've ever seen at the Cup.
So no Cheech Marin in person, though, huh?
Ah, you know, Cheech, he's a wuss. I really do. I hate these members of my generation who at some point in their lives, you know, they've had a turnaround, and now they must insist that everybody in the generation must follow them or they don't know what they're talking about. You know, the thing about being a baby boomer generation, we're getting back to the idea of tolerance, is I don't mind people saying, okay, I don't smoke pot anymore. But what I do mind is people saying, I don't smoke pot anymore, and you shouldn't either. And let me distance myself from you, because now you're a pothead and I'm not. I find the whole thing very indicative of one's character. And having said that, I think Tommy Chong has one of the greatest characters of anybody in this culture I've ever met. I have an extraordinary amount of respect for Tommy Chong. When they nailed his bong company, the equation they handed Tommy was, okay, somebody's going to go to jail here. It's going to be your son or it's going to be you. And the undercurrent was they wanted him, of course. He was the jewel in the crown. And Tommy Chong went to jail rather than see his son go to jail. That's character. Anyway.
Indeed. No,
I hold the two up in my estimate, you know, Cheech and Chong, and Tommy Chong as one of the best characters of anybody I've ever met. And I've never met Cheech Marin, but I'm disappointed by his action.
All right on, man. It sounds like the 20th annual Cannabis Cup was an international success again this year. We're going to speak with Danny Danko tomorrow about the different strains and winners. Rick, this has been a great conversation, as always, today. Thanks again for joining us here.
It's always a pleasure, and I'll be talking to you again soon, I'm sure.
Many thanks again, Rick. Rick Cusick is the associate publisher at High Times Magazine, and we'll be speaking with him next week, actually, as he and Keith Strupp travel up to Boston, Massachusetts for their arraignment on marijuana possession charges. They were arrested at the Boston Freedom Rally smoking a marijuana joint, and there were a lot of people smoking marijuana joints at the Boston Freedom Rally this year. So we'll speak with Rick again next week. Tomorrow on the program, we'll speak with Danny Danko, the cultivation editor at High Times Magazine, about the different strains and different winners at the Cannabis Cup this year.
Listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. Podcasting Technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.